All right, might make a start. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to session 2B. This session we're going to be discussing scheme updates for the Queensland CTP and NISQ scheme, so motor vehicle injuries. We'll be going for about 40 minutes and hopefully have 10 minutes of questions included in that. Just want to remind everyone about the feedback sessions through the app. Speaking in this session, we've got Neil Singleton and Kylie Horton. Neil is the Insurance Commissioner and has over 40 years' experience in the insurance industry in a range of general insurer, corporate and regulatory roles. Neil has been the Insurance Commissioner for the past 7 years and is the Interim Chief Executive Officer of the National Injury Insurance Scheme Queensland. Kylie Horton is the Director of Scheme Claims and has extensive personal injury insurance experience across CTP and workers' compensation claims in insurance and regulatory roles. Kylie manages the Queensland nominal defendant claims and NISQ claims, as well as monitoring the CTP scheme experience and supervising licensed CTP insurers. So without further ado, I'll welcome Neil Singleton. Thank you.
Thanks, Darryl. Good afternoon. Kylie and I are going to share the speaking role for both the CTP and the NIST presentations. If we run out of time for questions on CTP, we can come back to it at the end, maybe. The first slide is just a quick grab from our annual report, I hope this is available online, so you don't need to worry about the faint font. Our premium over the last year has reduced slightly as a result of the NISQ levy coming in and taking some of the premium pool out. The number of new claims coming into the scheme, 7,691 during the year. We will go into that point in more detail during the presentation. In terms of overall claim payments, last year $780 million was paid out. A fairly consistent picture, economic loss taking around about half of that. Legal costs and medical expenses taking around about $100 million each. That's not an atypical picture for the scheme. In terms of premiums, we were flatlining along until the NIS levy kicked in October 2016. When the government brought the NIS in April 2016, the Class 1 premium was $336. The NIS came in at October 2016, allowing time for system changes and for the levy to be processed. Subsequent to that, there was a scheme review announced by the government with the focus of bringing the scheme into a more affordable position in light of the NISQ levy coming in. So that the premium went up, plateaued down, and is currently at $352 for a Class 1 vehicle. There was one small bout of competition, you can see there, in terms of Allianz filing $5 below the ceiling. Other than that, we've had every insurer filed at the ceiling, so that's why you can't see any other lines other than the floor and the ceiling on this chart. Again, not atypical for this scheme. In terms of market share movement by insurer, it's been pretty much a steady grind. Some insurers sort of slightly falling market share, some slightly increasing. Fairly steady pattern, and that's been evident for quite some time. We know that there are some aspirations from insurers for growth, so we still have, if you like, a competitive scheme in terms of over 100% capacity, but in terms of actual market share, very little shift from time to time. As I mentioned, the number of new claims coming into the scheme is quite large, much larger than we've experienced in the past, borne out by this frequency worm. You can see that in 2015, the brown line starts to lift a little bit higher. 2016 lifts again, the blue line, which is at the top of that graph. And 2017, coming along the purple line, is sort of slightly above 2016. around about 2015, November 2015, they started working with the licensed CTP insurers to understand more about what was starting to drive this frequency increase. And it's obviously then sort of kept going from there as we, you know, have had to do more work on that. And we'll cover that off in the next few slides. But in terms of the detail of what lies behind these changes, Kylie's going to talk a bit about the claims experience.
Thanks, Neil. Hi, everybody. So as Neil said, we'll go a little bit deeper here. Obviously, the frequency is coming through in the last couple of years. Traditionally, quarter three is a large claim lodgement quarter for us in any event, but primarily these claims are made up by the 1Y cohort, so your minor whiplash type injuries. The last quarter was the largest number of claims lodged in our scheme for over 10 years. So the challenge for our insurers is to manage a large influx of claims. We've taken on board that they'll need to do recruitment, find experienced people to manage these claims, while ensuring only legitimate claims are paid. This slide looks at claim crash circumstances. The next few slides we've included because we are comparing our scheme to some of the New South Wales data where they've had changes in claim behaviour. This is a fairly consistent slide. It probably highlights for us in Queensland that we're seeing more rear-end collisions. That's probably not that unusual when you think about people travelling on motorways, highways to get to work, mobile phones, texting, that type of behaviour. So MACE will continue to work with Queensland Police and through our research initiatives to try and bring those statistics down. Claims by claimant age group, nothing to really point out there except to say that when we compare this to the New South Wales experience of an increase in infant claims, we certainly are not experiencing that in our scheme. We'll continue to watch closely to make sure that that phenomenon doesn't start to happen here. And again, claims by accident. New South Wales had an experience where a large number of people in one vehicle were lodging claims. We certainly haven't experienced that here in Queensland, and actually it's remained quite consistent that there's only primarily it's one claim per vehicle with a very consistent data set for the other cohorts there. This slide looks at the finalised severity of 1Y claims against average claim cost. There's four insurers in our scheme, the four licensed insurers. For quite some time now, the top two insurers continue to outperform the bottom two insurers. Having said that, MACE acknowledges that each insurer has a different mix of business and we need to be mindful of that. The average claim cost continues to come down, which is a really good thing for our scheme. We're conscious that the difference is at the moment, in 2016, the average claim costs were between $70,000 and $88,000 across the four insurers. This is for 1Y cohort claims. Evidence is starting to suggest that there are emerging law firms within our scheme who will settle claims below that average, which is probably why we're seeing this decrease. There are a number of well-established plaintiff law firms in Queensland who will not. They will settle towards the high end, around the $80,000 to $90,000. MACE has spent a number of months consulting with insurers, and our message has been and will continue to be that claims management, in our view, will be a significant contributing factor towards average claim cost continuing to decrease, and it could also have a huge impact on frequency. So insurers in Queensland are very aware of our expectations. This slide is in relation to an article in the Courier Mail where it was reported that there was a surge in New South Wales lawyers representing Queensland claimants. I'm not sure where they got their data from, but we don't believe that to be the case. In fact, this slide would say that the opposite is in fact is happening. It might have came about because two insurers had indirectly miscoded to the PIR, and when they went back to their claims and recoded, there was a drop. So we're not seeing that surge, and we just wanted to point that out today. This slide could also be retitled Potential Claim Farming, which is something that we are spending a lot of energy into trying to combat here in Queensland. We've taken two de-identified law firms and put them up as an example. The first law firm in pink there, for a number of years, has bounced along in the scheme, lodging fairly low numbers. And then for the last two quarters, you see that they've gone 32 to 45 claims per quarter. And then the law firm in the green, in the last two quarters, have doubled the number of claims that they've lodged. We've had several discussions with insurers about these law firms and others. And for the insurers and for MACE, it is really difficult to prove that there is claim farming happening amongst these firms. But pleasingly, one insurer has challenged a law firm on a number of claims that they lodged in a quarter, and that insurer has managed to have a number of claims withdrawn from the scheme because they push back and insisted on the lawyer disclosing to them how their client came about to sign up with them. And I'm not sure why, but they weren't able to provide that evidence, so those claims have been withdrawn. We're working with our legal panel, MACE, the MACE legal panel, to build a body of evidence to hopefully share with the Legal Services Commissioner in Queensland. We have a number of investigations ongoing at the moment where we're hoping to establish that claim farming is taking place in Queensland. Lots happening in this space around claims farming, claims fraud. Recently, MACE conducted a review of 1,500 files across the four insurers plus the nominal defendant to look at documents and data contained in those documents that isn't recorded in the PIR. We were able to identify that there are networks happening in Queensland, but there's no suggestion of fraudulent activity, not on the scale that you've seen in New South Wales. Again, we just don't have that hard evidence of claim farming, but we need to keep working with our insurers to find that evidence. MACE and all insurers agree that while we want the scheme to remain user-friendly and easy, we do need to be obtaining more information about claimants. So we're looking at introducing a number of new fields to our PIR and also introducing some personal identification fields to our Notice of Accident Claim form. We'll continue to support our insurers through fraud training. We had a fraud training session earlier in the year with the senior managers from the four insurers, but we really need to start looking at developing a program for claims officers within the insurers to help them potentially identify fraud and at least send some red flags up the channels of an insurer to reach senior management. Mace has also engaged Taylor Fry Infinity to do some work on our data set to see if there's any networks or activity of interest in our PIR, and we'll continue to keep focusing on that as well. That's back over to you, Neil.
I mentioned before about the government commissioning a CTP scheme review last year. We've completed the review in December. The report went to Cabinet, and Mace was instructed to implement all 19 recommendations from that review. We've grouped them into three categories here. One group are the reforms, the changes that Mace can make using its existing powers. The second group is an area that needs some further investigation, things like exploring the opportunity for risk rating, looking at IT solutions for online renewal and sales processes. So things that needed a lot more investigation and time spent on them than was available through the review process. And then the third category were the areas of the scheme that were felt to not need attention at that point in time, but to keep them under close review. This work is all currently on hold. For those who aren't aware, Queensland is currently in caretaker mode. There's an election coming on the 25th of November. Subject to the outcome of that election, we will either get back with a new government telling us what their commitments or priorities are for us, whether that is to keep implementing the review or whether it's a change of direction, we'll have to wait and see. But there are some things here that we can do using our own powers, so we don't need legislative reform. But we have obviously started a body of work and have been collaborating with insurers around how these changes might take place and looking at different options. Perhaps not surprising, four insurers gave four different responses on the pros and cons of some of those initiatives. But we'll work our way through if any of them make sense to explore further with government. Autonomous vehicles got a mention this morning. That's it's a big piece of work for all of the CTP regulators. Queensland is not alone. That our legislation currently requires a human driver of a vehicle, so we are not equipped, not ready for autonomous vehicles. And I think somewhere I heard that a level one vehicle, which is pretty much what it is today, human controlled, level five, fully autonomous, they're the easy ones. It's when you get to level three, level four, and you've got this interchangeability of the vehicle and the human who's in charge, who's in control, that's where your problems start. We're working with the National Transport Commission on a range of reform options along with all the other jurisdictions. That will come back with, I would expect, a national program of reform, because clearly you do not want an autonomous vehicle not being able to cross a state boundary because the rules change. As we've been working our way through these reforms, it has thrown up quite a number of interesting challenges for us. The Little Australia Post robot is actually whirring around the streets of New Farm in Brisbane. It's a robotic parcel delivery service. Department of Transport have refused to register it, so currently it is working on pavements only, and there is a person walks behind it, makes sure everything is all okay. But the future of these sorts of things is quite clearly Australia Post would like these to be bigger and on the road. The autonomous vehicles, there are that many designs and you know, sort of futuristic thinking about how they will work. But interestingly, in Dubai, they've just announced the police force there will have hover bikes so that the police can hover over the top of traffic snarls, traffic jams. That actually got raised in a different context in one of the discussions around what is a road and where might the airways above that road system kick in and out in terms of where does CASA sort of regulate flying vehicles and where does CTP scheme regulate cars currently in contact with the bitumen. quite possibly we've got a big future ahead of us and some very big challenges. So, where to for the CTP scheme? Obviously waiting on the direction from government around how we progress the CTP review. Ride booking vehicles are now legal in Queensland. Ride booking operators have until the 14th of January to get their vehicle moved into the new class, which is class 26 if you own your own vehicle. There's also capacity for hire cars to remain in class 4 if they are hired for ride booking purposes. We're told to expect about 12,000 vehicles moving into this new class. We'll know mid-January where we stand on that front. We're also working with the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator on changes that they want to make to the whole registration system for heavy vehicles. The CTP schemes will remain as is, we're told, but we'll just have this central registration system where the owner indicates the garaged address for the vehicle and then the CTP scheme that that responds. And National Transport Commission reforms. Kylie covered off the focus on claim farming and claim fraud, and I think it is important to distinguish. We do see these two things quite differently. Early on, there was a bit of overlap around how people talked about farming and fraud in one sentence. We have got a range of reforms we're working through with Department of Justice on how we might combat claim farming. We don't believe we can stop the claim farmers themselves, but we can certainly focus on the law firms and try to sort of negate the activity that the lawyers who want to engage with a claim farmer are allowed to perform. In terms of claims fraud, MACE has prosecuting powers under the Act to prosecute fraudulent claimants. Last year we prosecuted two people based on referrals from insurers of matters they believe were fraudulent. As Kylie's mentioned, we don't believe we have sort of an endemic fraud problem in Queensland, but that's not to say that the recent rise in frequency hasn't seen some people encouraged to put in a claim thinking there's easy dollars to be made. So we are investing in more tools, more resources, so we can make sure insurers are aware of what's happening in the scheme more broadly. And that the last thing we want is three insurers being really strong on one issue and one insurer being really weak and funding the business model of a fraudulent provider. We want all of the insurers collaborating on this for the health of the scheme and for the welfare of the scheme, as well as for their own balance sheet, obviously. So, well, look, thank you all. As always, one more slide. So while everyone in the room this morning was very busily talking about New South Wales CTP reform and the Blues keep talking about state of origin reform, Queensland just quietly gets on with the job. Thank you. Questions? We are alert to that. That was one of the reasons we brought Finity and Taylor Fry up to have a look at scheme experience to help us understand whether people were bringing that business model north. As the results to date have shown, there's no evidence of that, but it's something we're very alert to.
Hello.
Hello. The Queensland scheme is obviously a fault-based common law scheme, so the outcome that is measured is compensation, average claim cost. Health outcomes for the injured person aren't measured and tracked, so the scheme doesn't concern itself with what happens next after the person has received their money. Whether there's opportunities to explore that in more detail and whether you can bring that back into the treatment phase to say, can we improve the way a person is treated and improve their health outcome is something that we have a large research spend every year looking at how we can improve treatment protocols. But no, the scheme doesn't explicitly measure those sort of, you know, health outcomes.
So we've got a second part of the presentation, which is to do with the NISQ scheme. So you're talking about it?
I'll start off, and then Connolly. So the NISQ, I think quite a few years ago, Lou Watts was here talking about dinosaurs, and that WA and Queensland were quite proudly dinosaurs at the time with no NIS scheme. From 1 July 2016, we both jumped on board and initiated a fault-based NIS. So regardless of fault, people who suffer a serious personal injury are now protected by this new scheme. It's a brand new reform to the extent that NDIS is rolling out in Queensland. There is nothing comparable in the NIS space. Both workers' comp and CTP have these schemes. CTP, or motor vehicle, is by far the larger of the two. In terms of our numbers, we were more than tenfold larger than the workers' compensation scheme in terms of expected numbers. Since the legislation was passed in May 2016, we have had a host of operational challenges, as you might expect. Thankfully, our first participant didn't turn up for 3 months, so that gave us some breathing space to get going, and our numbers are still tracking lower than expected. We did get a new board, or we've got a board established from the 1st of July 2017, seven people. It's been, I think, a well-regarded board, very well credentialed in terms of a range of experience from a legal, insurance, medical and actuarial perspective. So the board has met twice and is still obviously in a forming stage, but I think the sense is that we've now that's the first important step for us in really bringing this to life. And strong strategic direction and governance for this scheme. During that formative stage, we held a number of stakeholder forums. Somebody remarked at one stage we had more stakeholders than participants in the scheme for quite some time, and it felt that way when you had 40 or 50 people coming into the room to talk about what was the NIS, what did we expect the NIS to do, and how would this new scheme sit into established regimes. We've certainly had some challenges with the health system around how this new scheme works for someone who wakes up in the PA hospital with a serious spinal cord or brain injury. This is all new, a lot of unknowns, and what happened to those people before. I think at times remains a mystery as to just how did these people get by without access to a scheme like this. But we are now seeing this scheme deliver real benefits to Queenslanders already, both in terms of enabling people to return home to a modified house, getting access to care and support so that they can return back to their community. And we've had a couple of people who have already sort of, I think, moved on beyond the phase of needing our care and support, and by all accounts are, you know, in a return to work phase and are learning to cope without needing the support and assistance of the scheme. The strategic plan is available on our website, so please don't worry about the two-point font. But it was a very comprehensive exercise in looking at what does this scheme need to do in terms of the whole range of stakeholders that it needs to meet in terms of expectations, and then what does the scheme need to deliver. And one of the questions that our board asked us was start thinking about what does success look like in this scheme. And when you start thinking about what does success look like, you look at it through the eyes of the different stakeholders in the scheme. So success for the motorist, to the participant, to government, all was quite clearly quite different. So this is a piece of work that is expanding in terms of how we make sure we understand what it means to have a good, successful NIS, how all of these outcomes are driven by our strategic plan, and that we make sure the community is aware of what we're doing, that we make sure we're continually improving the scheme, and that it is meeting the broad expectations of a host of different stakeholders. In terms of the first year, we did get much fewer participants than we expected, but they came from far north Queensland to western Queensland to the southern border. So we were stretched geographically by the people we had. Our youngest participant was one, our oldest was 85. Came off a motorbike, from memory. But we've had a couple of older people off motorbikes, so it's we've been stretched geographically and in terms of the cohorts, even though we have got fewer people in the scheme. And I'm going to let Kylie now run through the claims experience in terms of some of the detail.
Okay, as Neil mentioned, the projected numbers for our scheme still remain low, which is a good thing. At the moment, we're up to 96 participants, but there was anticipation that we could be almost double that at this point in time. Most of our participants are reported within the first 4 months of sustaining their injury. Spinal cord clients are reported much quicker than that. We usually know about them within the first 1 or 2 weeks of their injury. I think the challenge for our scheme at the moment is around the potential that brain injuries are not being reported, that some possible participants could be leaving hospital unaware that they could meet eligibility for our scheme. It probably means for us that we just need to do a lot more work in talking to stakeholders like hospitals and treatment providers to make sure that we that those potential participants are being made aware of the scheme. The next few slides just take a little bit of a deeper dive into some of the characteristics of our participants and how they've ended up coming into the scheme. The trucks and utes travelling long distances for both work and recreational purposes in regional Queensland in particular have a high representation. There's probably no surprises with that, and nor the fact that motorcycle riders are Queensland's most vulnerable on the roads. Don't like to labour on the point, but it is 100% males coming into our scheme who are injured on motorbikes. And as we suspected, a lot of those are the younger males. Worryingly, though, we have had a number of older guys coming into our scheme. So please, if you're going to have a midlife crisis, don't buy a motorbike. Far safer to go bungee jumping or jump out of a plane with a parachute. Almost 50% of the participants that we've accepted on an interim basis from motorbike accidents would not have been accepted under CTP. So we've estimated that they are at fault for their injuries. We've also had a small percentage, almost 6% of the injuries around a permanent brachial plexus. That is unique to our scheme and, as far as I'm aware, correct me if I'm wrong. No, it's not anymore. Oh. Oh, there you go. Sorry, I thought that was something that we've obviously stolen it from you, Suzanne. Oh, fab, of course you do. Of course you do. Okay. My apologies. So the next slide looks at the role in accident and the injury mix. What we are finding is that potentially with our permanent spinal cord injured clients that there is also a brain injury associated with that injury, and I suppose because of the serious nature of a permanent spinal cord injury, sometimes the brain injury is going undiagnosed. So our support planners are having to manage multifaceted types of behaviour and injuries in that cohort. And obviously the largest number is pure brain injury coming into the scheme. Challenges and opportunities. I think what's starting to emerge operationally for us is with the hybrid model, and that we have a number of participants now who could be in a position within the next 6 to 12 months make a decision around deciding to take a lump sum. So for us, we need to start working with a number of stakeholders about what that might look like. We need to engage with the CTP insurers and lawyers to work through that process. Our Act does outline some measures on how we'll go about doing that, but at the same time, the lump sum is a unique feature in our scheme, so it's hard for us to tap into other schemes to see what worked there. We have the added complexity that a CTP insurer has the ability to negotiate their settlement. The NIS doesn't, because it's a no-fault scheme. If you're entitled to $8 million for your care, treatment, support, that's what it is. So it'll be fascinating to see how that plays out over time, whether or not it's in the traditional sense of an informal settlement conference or it goes to something like a mediation or, I hate to say it, trial. We've started the utilisation of external case management within our scheme. We do have the internal case management model with our support planners, but we've had a couple of participants recently request the ability to engage an external case manager, which we've agreed to. We also see benefits for this regionally. It will be hard for us to service all areas of Queensland, so we've developed an external case management policy to assist us in that. We also need to continue to remain consistent in our messaging and consistent in our decision-making framework around necessary and reasonable services for participants. We have said no on a couple of occasions, and those participants have sought an internal review, but to date we've not had any decisions go to QCAT or the Medical Assessment Tribunal. I think that's about it from me, but again, Neil and I are open to any questions that you might have in relation to the NIS. Hi. We're not necessarily measuring that, but we can say that approximately a quarter of our participants have lodged a CTP claim. Okay. Hi.
Given that this is such a very long-tail scheme, we are very cautious around the numbers. We don't know after 1 year of experience whether we're going to see a number of people join the scheme late. So it's very early to be sort of looking at how we approach the levy setting and premium. It's just too early to talk to us.
Yeah, I've just got a quick question. That's following on from Dan's question before. Do you have done any thinking about the health outcomes for particularly the NIST group?
Yeah, that's absolutely imperative for us. So it's a big focus of how we help people in terms of setting their goals, being very participant focused, hoping the goals they set, how we help them achieve those goals.
I think we've run out of time, but if you'd like to join me in thanking Neil and Kylie for their presentation. Thank you.